Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources, and Charles Archer, financial journalist and investor. Welcome, gents.
Wonderful. Well, good evening, everybody.
So today we will dive deep into the investment potential of Golden Metal Resources, a company with a promising future in the mining industry. As outlined in the article which Charles wrote, titled The Golden Metal Resources Edit, the company boasts the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit on US soil, hinting at significant growth opportunities. Discussion will revolve around the insights provided by the author's edit, a comprehensive summary of the investment case designed to educate investors on the company's potential. With CEO Oliver Friesen at the helm, Golden Metal Resources has shown remarkable progress since its IPO in May 2023, indicating a strong trajectory for future success. We'll explore the market dynamics surrounding tungsten, a critical input metal in various high-value industries, and draw parallels to similar success stories like Sovereign Metals. From the recent stock performance to the long-term outlook, we'll dissect the key factors driving Golden Metal Resources' potential and the implications for investors. So without further ado, I'll hand the floor over to Charles.
I think we should launch straight in. So I wrote an article on investing strategy, literally the Golden Metal Resources Edit. And I'm doing this series of articles, and a lot of the companies are going to be in like the junior resource sector, where I think there's a really good opportunity to buy shares when they're relatively low, even off the rise I feel that they are still now, and benefit from some significant profits. Now, I think we should probably dive straight into Pilot Mountain, because regardless of everything else that's going on, that is the flagship. So, or maybe even start more basic. There's about 100 companies on the FTSE market. If a retail investor or an institutional investor were to say to you, Oliver, why should I invest in Golden Metal over anybody else, in about 100 words, what would you say to them?
What I would say is, and just a trend that I think is front of mind for most investors in just Western world countries, is the fact that we really need to reshore our domestic critical and defense metal supply chains. I mean, the need to do that has never been more prevalent than it is now. I think Golden Metal Resources is going to play a huge part of that, and specifically on the tungsten front, which is probably one of the more important metals in the defense sector alone. So we have a very unique business case. We have the optionality and potential to receive non-dilutive funding from the U.S. government, which many companies do not have access to. So we're in a very unique position, and we're front and center of one of the most important movements happening in the Western world at the moment.
Wonderful. Smashed it. That's an excellent answer. That's exactly what you want to hear. So when you talk about, you know, being front and center, you're talking about tungsten, we're obviously talking about Pilot Mountain here. So Pilot Mountain is, as far as I'm aware, and as far as, well, I'm pretty certain anyway, it's the largest tungsten deposit that's undeveloped in the US. Golden Metal owns 100% of the asset. And the general gist is, it's in Nevada. It's perfectly located for power, water, transport, and labor. There are other assets in North America, potentially, that are maybe a little bit larger, but they're located just in the middle of nowhere, and developing them will be a complete nightmare. And in Nevada, it's been ranked among the top mining jurisdictions worldwide by the Fraser Institute year after year, often it's number one. So here's my first question. You have a mineral resource estimate back from 2017 to 2018, and it covered 12.3 MT at 0.27% for 34.3 kilotons of contained tungsten metal alongside copper, silver, and zinc credits. How out of date is that number? Because the first thing that I would do is calculate, you know, a net present value based on that. Is that kind of out of date, or is it probably quite realistic, that number at the moment?
I mean, it's in date in the sense that not a ton of drilling has been conducted since then. So the drilling data that existed in 2018 is more or less complete. There was a few additional holes drilled after that resource was established, including a few holes to the east of Desert Shield that actually hit some of the best tungsten mineralization ever found at Pilot Mountain. So, but like I said, there hasn't been a ton of drilling that's been done since then. So the actual, you know, contained in-ground metal it's relatively up to date and would be more or less correct. You know, the thing that's really changed since then, I would say, is the pricing of the various commodities. So tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc have all certainly increased in value since then, probably on average by about 30 to 50%. So there's been a very material increase in the pricing of the various metals. If we were to go and update the resource, we would first of all do with the 43-101 standards, and it would certainly grow a little bit. But our intention would be to drill a lot more and then look to reestablish that resource as part of an economic study. But it's a great starting point. We're very confident in the numbers that were outlined in that resource and looking forward to building on that in 2024.
But then on top of that, we've had some garnet news. So we had an RNS relatively recently where, you were saying that there's a significant amount of garnet within the resource. We actually had a chat about it the other day. You were talking about how this means that not only do you have an extra saleable product, you're probably going to see wear and tear on any future plant reduced, and it just significantly improves the economics. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So as I mentioned, you know, tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc were the four sellable products that we knew of and that we had quantified within the resource, or that was quantified in 2018. One thing that was a question mark, or it was sort of, you know, in the back of my mind when we acquired the asset, was this garnet potential that you mentioned. And it was well known about. I mean, it's funny, I was talking to someone from the Nevada government recently, and I mentioned the deposit, and they go, "Wait, is that the one with all the garnet?" And they had apparently he was telling me that a bunch of schools go to this our property and take garnet from surface to show kids in class or something like that. I was kind of laughing, but he said, "Yeah, it's a really well known garnet resource, our garnet source." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting, because we just put out some news on it." But beyond that, why we're so kind of excited about it, and why it, I think, is potentially quite material for the potential, you know, future of the project, is we have a very considerable amount of garnet in all the mineralized intervals across the project. So the important thing to note here, and one of the questions I've gotten is, okay, well, is there a separate kind of garnet resource, which is separate and different in a different area than the tungsten resource? No. What we're looking at is a tungsten skarn, which means when you drill through the mineralized zone, like if you drilled through Desert Scheelite right now, which is where the majority of the in-ground resources, you would get tungsten, copper, silver, zinc, and garnet all within those intervals. So the great thing is, it just means, hey, when we go and, you know, if you were to mine this, you'd take that rock out of the ground and all five of those products would be there in varying quantities. But as you mentioned, you know, one of the reasons why this is so significant, or why we think it could be so significant, is how it fits into the flow sheet. The great thing is garnet, and the specific garnet species we have on this project, is slightly magnetic and also has a very different density than some of the surrounding minerals like the scheelite that the tungsten is found in. So what that means is, and the way that this is going to fit into the flow sheet, is what we'll do is we would blast, we would crush, and then at that state, you'd be able to either through gravity separation or through magnetic separation, you'd be able to take the garnet out at that stage. And the number that we quoted in the RNS was about 40%. A lot of the reports, metallurgic reports that we've sent off to the lab and have analyzed, have come back with north of 50% garnet, but we said 40%. We think that's a conservative number. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We think, based on a lot of the other data sets that we have, that was a number that we felt comfortable announcing to the market, but that still is a very material number, which means, you know, 40% of the mineralized interval is literally garnet. So I mentioned, within the flow sheet, the garnet, we believe we can separate with either gravity or magnetic separation very early on. So not only do we have another saleable product very early on in the process, but potentially even more importantly is the fact that 40% of what is a very abrasive material has been removed from the rest of the circuit, which includes your grinding, which includes your flotation. So just a lot less wear and tear on the kind of the parts later on in the circuit.
So,
and we have the extra product as well.
So presumably you'll have a slight initial CapEx increase when you build the original plant to get the garnet out, but then you recover that extra cost really quickly from that reduced wear and tear. Is that about right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the additional CapEx would be either your gravity separator or your magnetic separator, which is a relatively low cost, and then you would earn that back very quickly.
In terms of like a plant, would you do have sort of, obviously this is far flung in the future, do you have any kind of like ideas how big you want the plant to be, where you're going to site it, you know, how much is it going to cost? I mean, I know a fair few mineral processing engineers. You can get a small operation up and running for $10 million, but then you can even easily go into the hundreds of millions. So what kind of, do you think you're going to now potentially go down like the pilot plant stage and then build up, or do you want to go a big bang straight away?
Yeah, I mean, it probably is a bit too early to discuss that in detail. But what I will say is we want to be a significant garnet producer within the U.S. landscape. You know, that's something that we feel very confident we can do with the amount of contained tungsten Pilot Mountain. Just for reference, the U.S. consumes about 10,000 tons per year of tungsten. None of that actually comes from the U.S. That is all imported. A small percentage of that is from recycling, but the majority comes from China, as we've discussed many times before. But, you know, the reality is we have 35,000 tons contained tungsten at present with a massive exploration story. So you just kind of run those numbers. I mean, that project alone, if you extracted all the tungsten, could produce enough tungsten for 3.5 years to fully supply the U.S. for all its different use cases, including defense, auto, you know, manufacturing, aerospace, all above. So there's quite a bit of tungsten there, obviously. And what we want to do ultimately is put together a project that we think can supply a very material amount of tungsten to the U.S. market, with the ultimate goal of you know, replacing China. And that China, you know, imports about 3,000 to 3,500 tons per year. And we think that that potentially could be achievable if we have some exploration success at Pilot Mountain.
Wonderful. I mean, like, to give some color, China controls 86% of the global tungsten supply. It had an export controls on tungsten all the way up until 2015, 2016. It had to stop those because of the World Trade Organization. But it's now brought in new export controls on graphite and certain rare earth elements. Tungsten is one of those metals, but if China decides it wants to impose some kind of export ban, obviously geopolitics, you know, global trade, there's ways around it. But the US is going to want to get its own domestic source back up and running as soon as possible. I mean, this is just my perspective. And the thing is with tungsten, like titanium, you can't replace it with anything else. So with lithium, for example, it is a pain, but you could use sodium ion batteries in some use cases, or alternatively vanadium, or there's various other metals you could go with. But with tungsten, you can't replace it. In defense applications in particular, it's something where you have to have at least some of it. And that's why the business case is so great. There's only one publicly traded tungsten-focused company in the entire US, and that's Golden Metal Resources. I want to talk a little bit about the targets that you have. So, you know, in June 2023, and again, you're waiting, hopefully, on grant funding, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But in June 2023, you announced that there were 5 high-priority exploration targets. I won't go through the names. I've embarrassed myself with my pronunciation. But okay, let's say, for example, you get a bit of grant funding or some warrants get exercised, you get a bit of money. Which target are you going to drill first? Or do you want to drill them all at the same time? What's the number one to go for at the moment?
I mean, I'd love to drill them all at the start, to be completely honest. But, you know, if I'm being realistic, oh man, it's a good question. I would say probably the one that I would drill the first would be the Desert Scheelite Parallel West Zone. The reason for that is, I encourage listeners to go to our website, go to our corporate presentation, and just have a look at the Pilot Mountain overview map as I kind of talk about this. The reason I would probably start here is this is a target that we uncovered and discovered in 2022, 2023 with our IP survey. And this is a bit of a technical run through. And just forgive me, I'm going to take a few minutes to explain this because it's very important what I'm saying. When you do geophysics over an existing known mineralized body, it's much different than doing geophysics over virgin terrain where you have no drill holes on it and you know nothing about the subsurface. We know precisely where Desert Scheelite is, which hosts the majority of the in-ground resource at Pilot Mountain. So we have the largest tungsten resource in the U.S. sits within Desert Scheelite. Full stop, we know within a few meters exactly where that body of rock lies. Now, this is important because when we go and do geophysics now, we can look for the exact geophysical signature that lines up with that body. It's like a cheat code because I can look at the data. I have a 3D model on my computer where I can pull up the geophysical bodies that were returned from the survey that we did. And then I flip on the actual mineralized body of rock and I see what geophysical signature that body of rock created. And then what I do, and like I said, it's a cheat code, I then look elsewhere within the survey area and I look for the exact same geophysical signature. Because what we're looking for is additional zones of skarn, tungsten, copper, silver, zinc, and garnet mineralization. So at Desert Scheelite, what we've noticed there, and I won't go into the actual details, but what we have there in broad strokes is a chargeability high and a resistivity low. That body of rock that has that all that tungsten causes charge high, res low. I know the exact numbers. I can tell you exactly the milliseconds that the chargeability anomaly that created. That's not important for this conversation. But what I then did is I looked elsewhere within the property with my geophysicist to say, okay, are there any other zones that look almost identical to desert scheelite that have never been drilled? And sure enough, there were multiple. The one that I think is the most interesting for multiple reasons is desert scheelite parallel west. Number one, it's effectively sub-parallel to desert scheelite. So what we're looking at is maybe a stacked zone, which is very common in these type of geological terrains. But more importantly, the geophysical signature that showed up at desert scheelite parallel west was, I kid you not, almost identical to desert scheelite, but with the caveat that that zone has never received a single drill hole. On top of that, I mean, what we can do with this software is we can estimate the size of these anomalies. Obviously, it's not going to give us the tonnage, but we can say, hey, this is a, you know, 400 meter zone by 300 by two, whatever that number is. And sure enough, the desert scheelite parallel west zone was larger than desert scheelite. Now, that is one of the five zones that we identified. Plus, there's another three zones, Garnet, Good Hope, Gunmetal, which have known drilled intercepts of tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc, which have not, the majority of which have not been added to the mineral inventory. So it's a long-winded answer, but what I'm saying here is really important, because if we go and drill desert scheelite parallel west, one single hole, and if we intersect what we think is probably going to be there, because we know what's the, you know, we know the geophysical signature there, that potentially could be a body that's already bigger than desert scheelite, which means we've more than doubled our resource with, you know, very little drilling. So that's a bit of a long-winded answer. That's one I would probably start with. The other ones I could probably give you an almost equally as bullish answer, but I think just that one really highlights why what we're doing is so important and how tremendous the exploration upside is on this property.
Listen, if you think you can double your resource by with a few drills into one asset, one target even, then I understand why that would be number one. I can equally understand as CEO why you want to, you know, you don't want to say the others are like children that you want to neglect. Obviously they're not, but there's always going to be one that you want the most. I mean, it used to be a working mine, to my knowledge, you know, back in the olden days. Last I heard, you had applied to get permits of some kind. Have those permits been granted, or are you still waiting on them? Or can you not say, maybe?
Yeah, so just before we get into the next stage, obviously it's important to caveat and say that obviously until we go and drill it, we don't know what's causing that. But based on the data that I presented, there's obviously encouragement there and a reason why we'd start there.
You're at the mercy of the drill bit, you know, but obviously you can improve your odds the more you know about where you're going to drill.
Exactly. And my mandate is always measure twice, measure three times, and cut once. And we've certainly done that here at Pilot Mountain and feel very confident with our targeting. So permits, the last that we announced in the previous RNS was that we were finalizing our permit applications. I can't say more than that. I can't confirm or deny if they've been submitted yet. But what I can say and just reiterate that we are, well, the last we announced was that we were in the final stages of preparing our permits. Just for you know, listeners' reference, when permits are submitted in Nevada to the BLM, it usually takes about plus or minus 6 weeks to get those in hand. So it's a very quick and efficient permitting process. And I have good relationships with the BLM office that we submit any permit application to. So we're very confident about that process.
It's a brownfield site and it's been operational before. You would assume, you know, obviously, again, you can't guarantee anything. You would assume that's something that should be, you know, relatively easily pushed through.
Absolutely.
Back in early June, you appointed Chang Turkmani as your strategic United States government advisor because, you know, generically, you're looking to get some kind of grant funding for Pilot Mountain. Now, when we talk about grant funding, I mean, one of the companies that, you know, I've talked about in the past is Blanco Resources, and they got $5 million from the DFC. I'm not going to ask about how much money you might have applied for, because you won't be able to tell me, or what you've applied for, because you won't be able to tell me. What I will say, though, is that if you started applying in kind of June, July, you would imagine there would be some kind of news flow relatively soon. Now, I know you can't give an exact timeline. I can see you smiling through the camera, but would you say investors be able to see, you know, expect an update within the next, let's say, 3 months? Would you say that's reasonable, or you're not, or you can't say? Maybe you can't say at all. I don't know.
Oh man, I mean, I really can't say. I mean, what I can highlight though, and I knew you were going to ask that, Charles. But what I can highlight is the various data points that give us the confidence that we believe we are a fantastic candidate to receive government funding. You know, it's almost every day now that you're seeing a new article from various U.S. news agencies about the severity of the situation on the critical and defense metals front. I know I this might sound like a bit of a broken record, but it really is important to reiterate some of these data points. Ammunition stockpiles are effectively depleted. ELA stockpiles are depleted. China is the biggest import partner of the U.S. Yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean,
just everything, critical mineral deposits, they've sold them all off, right? With defense of how they sold them.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of disgruntled former defense, you know, employees and ministers are now coming out and saying, what have we done? Like, this is a huge mistake. We need to support domestic mining and get our reshore our critical and defense metal supply chain. So, I mean, that's kind of all I can say is, I mean,
that's all you can
say. Obviously, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and I'm having, you know, direct discussions with various groups in the U.S. But, it, you know, what you're seeing on the outside in the news and the, you know, on Yahoo and all these other, that's what's going on behind the closed doors too. So, you know, we all know it's no secret that this is a priority. There's no secret we own the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit on U.S. soil. So we'll kind of leave it at that. I mean, I can't comment on timelines. I can't comment on what we're applying for or the amount we're applying for. I could just give the data points, which are the same data points we have, which ultimately lead us to believe that we are a very strong candidate. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I will impress you.
we'll certainly announce as soon as we can, because that would be obviously very mature for the business. And it's a huge part of what we're doing here.
I guess what I can ask, right? Say you do get some grant funding of, you know, a few million, maybe more, all your dreams come true. Mm-hmm. How quickly would a drill go in the ground? And how quickly would you get some kind of assay, some kind of like concrete results? Is that something you maybe can answer, or you're not? Again, I don't know. I feel like maybe you can't, but it's nice to look to the future.
Well, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we've disclosed what we're doing on the permitting side. I've just told everyone what the timelines are, so everyone can have a rough idea as to when we'd have permits in hand.
Yeah,
I can say that I have fantastic connections in Nevada, and including with a drilling contractor that we will be using on all of our projects. I can't say where we're at with that process, but it's a company that I know I'm very familiar with, and the principals I know very well. And
quick, everybody get Googling.
I work with very closely many times in the past. So what that can tell you is that we are certainly in a position of readiness. On top of that, it's not like we need government funding to start the drill bit. You know, I've made it clear that my ultimate goal would be to have the government pay for it. But, you know, the reality is we know there's a lot of value we can add to this project on the back of drilling. You know, Desert Shelite Peril West alone, if we put a drill hole into that and it's what we hope it's going to be, obviously there's a ton of value added there. So what we're doing is we're getting all our ducks in a row. We're measuring twice. We're getting our permit applications in. We're getting our permits in hand. We're finalizing things with the drilling contractor, and we are in a position of readiness. And we have, you know, we raised money at the IPO. There's warrant money coming in. It's not to say that we're going to sit on our hands and wait for a grant, but, you know, a grant could obviously come in and fund that, but we're also in a position to do that ourselves. So we have lots of optionality. We know the value we can add with the drill bit, and we know the value that a grant would add as well. So we're working on a lot of things in the background. Hopefully that helps and gives a bit more color without getting me into too much trouble.
Yes, your life, you know, as a CEO, I chat to CEOs, you know, most weeks, and all they can do is give me information which I kind of already know, but you color it in and you make it pretty. One concern that I do have, you know, to finish up with Pilot Mountain quickly before we move on to the other assets.
Yeah.
I speculate, given that it is, you know, an important mineral reserve, and with drilling could become much larger, do you ever worry the US government might just come and take it off your hands? Just say, I'm sorry, we've got to develop it. It's something that, you know, in the name of national defense. Or do you think that's very unlikely? I don't know. The thing is, I would say it's very unlikely, but then politics, especially, you know, changes so quickly. I don't know.
I mean, the benefit of being in not only the Western world, but in Nevada means we have 100% asset security, which means we have no concern that the government would ever come in and do that. What they could do, and there is discussions of this, and I've heard rumors about this, is the DLA, which is the Defense Logistics Agency, which is typically the large critical mineral stockpiles that the U.S. has put together to effectively tap into during war times when they couldn't rely on the likes of China and Russia, which they have depleted now effectively and are looking to now build up again. Well, the DLA will, you know, within a certain period of time here, they haven't disclosed. And this is all public information. I mean, I think I actually tweeted about this today. But the DLA is going to be a very large buyer of tungsten concentrate and tungsten products within, they say, about 12 months. So one of the largest suppliers of tungsten in the U.S. market will become one of the largest consumers. I mean, just that fact alone is probably one of the most important data points. So what that means is that, you know, there could be, you know, for instance, the DLA could say, hey, we need half of your tungsten, but they're going to pay fair rates
for it.
They're never going to say we want it for free. I mean, we're in a democratic society. Yeah. We're in Nevada. You know, if anything, if the government wants it, they'll probably have to overpay for it, which is not a bad problem to have. So no concerns whatsoever. I can tell you, I sleep very soundly at night knowing that my very fantastic asset will never be taken from me, and it will allow me to push it forward and monetize it in a way that makes sense for shareholders.
I have to prize it from your cold, dead hands, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Right. So when I first wrote about, covered gold and metal, going almost a year ago now, Pilot Mountain was pretty much the entire investment case, and that was enough by itself for me. And obviously people are starting to, pay attention to it given the share price rise in 2024. But I reckon we might have a second flagship in Garfield. And now I will say, and I know you did this caveat with Pilot, but, it is early days, the exploration, but what you're coming out with in the RNSs looks very, very promising. So what's going on with Garfield? Can you color that in for us?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Garfield is one that, it's very near and dear to my heart. I'm a kind of a porphyry geologist by trade. I spent the better part of about 8 years focused on porphyry exploration up through Nevada, Idaho, and then through British Columbia, my home province. And so I know these systems quite well. I feel quite comfortable exploring for them, drilling for them, doing all the things you need to do to make a discovery. I've actually been involved with a few porphyry discoveries up in British Columbia. So it's geology I'm very comfortable with. So as the CEO of Golden Metal now, it's almost come full circle to have a very exciting, as you mentioned, grassroots porphyry story, but one that is very quickly not becoming grassroots here as we continue to push it forward and the results continue to deliver. So what we have there is a very large footprint now, over kind of 4 kilometers along strike, about a kilometer width. So very, very large footprint. We have, multi-percent copper across that entire footprint. We have all the really important alteration, mineralization type hallmarks of a very important porphyry system. We have epithermal overprinting. This is all a bit technical, but that just means you have elevated gold and silver. So just another kind of feather in the cap of this particular project. So it's one we love. We've been pushing it forward at pace, especially while a lot of important conversations have been going around in the background on the mountain and tungsten. But we're excited about this one. We have a bullseye anomaly now, which could be a porphyry center. So we're moving this along quickly. It's in a fantastic location. It's near a road, and we're looking forward to announcing the next steps here on this project in the not too distant future.
So with porphyry systems, and this is, I'm not a geologist, so take it with a pinch of salt or correct me. My general understanding is that the grades of copper are generally lower than other systems, but the size of the deposit is generally larger. And therefore, to mine it economically, you tend to need quite a large kind of plant. Would that be fair or not? And yet you seem to have these grades, which are really high, and if you combine high grades with a large system, is that a fair comment or not? I don't know. It seems to be typically how it works, but maybe this isn't a typical deposit.
I think you nailed it there, Charles. Like you said, it's larger footprint, larger tonnage, but lower grade. And I kind of saw you chuckle there when you kind of referenced the size of the footprint we have now and the grades that we have, which are at this stage higher than a lot of kind of porphyry deposits that you'll find within this belt. So, just for reference, and this is just kind of very arm wavy, but I would say a typical copper porphyry head grade for a mine would be, 0.3, 0.4%. You might have, a 0.2 gram per ton gold kicker and maybe a few grams per ton silver. So that would be enough. If I'm investing in the space myself and I'm looking at different porphyry explorers and looking at news, if I see, 150 meters of 0.5, 0.5% copper, I'm very, very happy.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about that. So that's just to put into context what investors and listeners can kind of look for here. I encourage, with that context in mind, have a look once again at the results we've achieved so far at surface. Caveat that with saying, by saying we need to make sure that we need to go, you obviously see what's in the subsurface.
Put a drill in, yeah.
But you know, in my experience, what you see at surface is you know usually somewhat of an indication at what's at depth. Just a matter of how that's manifested and how big it is. So more work to do there, but early signs are certainly very, very positive.
Well, bonanza silver grades. What we said on the 23rd of January, 1,225 grams per ton. I mean, yeah, at the Pamlico Gold Zone, that you know, and again, identification of a uranium target. So, I mean, when I rep the RNS, what I'm saying is, okay, we've got the bonanza silver grades, we've got the uranium target, it all overlaps. And again, just like the five targets you have at Pilot Mountain, you know exactly where you want to drill, right? Once you get the funding in place. So you've engaged an expert geochemist, Simon Griffiths?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me, what's he doing at the moment? So if you know where the targets are, mm-hmm. and what you want to do next, what's Simon up to at the moment?
So yeah, so geochemistry is a really, really important kind of sub-science, I guess, within the overall kind of geological sector. Reason being, you know, what we do is when we send the soil samples to the lab or we send the rock samples to the lab, we don't just get, you know, one column that says copper and one that says silver and off we go. You know, we do full multi-element analysis, which means we get north of 51 different elements within the results. So the reason that is important is because it's not just as simple as, you know, what's the copper, what's the silver, what's the gold. These things are zoned, and by digging into the actual multi-element analysis, I mean, you can look at the bismuth versus yttrium anomaly or the copper over zinc. I'm just making these up as sort of a reference, but there's literally so many ratios that there's dozens and dozens of porphyry papers, which will dive into, okay, this ratio means this, and, you know, enrichment of this kind of unique pathfinder means you're in this part of the porphyry. So in porphyry exploration, it's you're looking for a big system, but it's quite scientific, and you know, you don't want to just go in there and drill the hottest copper surface, because that could be a red herring for where you should actually be looking. So when we work with Simon, and I've been working with Simon for quite some time now, I mean, he's a magician. Like, I'll send him a data set with all these different tabs, and he comes back with a story that is so unique and special and tells you so, so much more about the project that you could ever imagine. So that's what we're working on with him, is really taking the data we have and extracting as much value as we can out of that data set to make sure that we are honing in on the best possible drill targets at this property.
Gotcha. Now, that is an excellent answer. I honestly, I know this sounds ridiculous. I didn't know. I looked at it and okay, well, you know where your target is, you know where you want to put the drill down. But what you're saying is he's going to zone it down even further. So
exactly.
The 1x1 square meter, he's going to tell you where to put the drill in. You identify the uranium, I mentioned before, the uranium target within potentially the porphyry system. How do you, I guess you don't know, but why do you suspect there's uranium there? I don't know, how could you know from surface exploration?
Yeah, so I mean, typically, the fact that there was a uranium target there was a bit of a head scratcher, just geologically.
It shouldn't be there. Sorry, well, I say shouldn't, you know, it's the Earth, everything's, you can never know, there's always a outlier, but, you know, it feels like it's a weird spot to be, so I'm surprised, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good surprise, right, and like you said, yeah, it's course. The Earth, and it's geology, and I've, as a, you know, being a geologist for 15 years now, I'm always surprised about something, I'm always surprised by something new, right, so I never think I know it all, because I certainly don't, and you'll always be surprised, but, you know, The story about that one is there's actually a uranium-focused company which is exploring just to the southwest of us. So they're in a slightly different belt of rocks, but there is some overlap. I mean, you're not too far away. I mean, we're talking about a few miles away, a few kilometers away. Yeah, so they were drilling for uranium not too long ago and hit some interesting intercepts. So it's not like your typical Saskatchewan uranium. This is a intrusive hosted uranium, which is, you know, a bit different and geologically makes more sense in the context of this property. But though the way that we came about this particular target was they had actually collected soil samples over parts of our claims. And then on top of that, they collected a drone radiometric survey, which radiometrics, if you get elevated radiometrics, it means there's some sort of decaying of uranium or thorium at surface. So what effectively they had was a radiometric anomaly identified in the airborne or in the drone, and that perfectly coincided with a anomaly in the soil. So because of that, and then we looked at the map and went, that target's on our property. It's actually perfectly within our high grade zone or quite close to it. So that was an interesting development. It was one that we got for free, which is great. I don't know how it fits in yet. I mean, that's going to be part of the follow-up here, is understanding that target a bit more. I mean, this is still very much a copper, silver, gold porphyry exploration target. But there's certainly, you know, we just kind of presented it because that's what we got, and we'll look into it more and see what comes of it.
Well, the thing is, you never know when you put a drill in the ground what you're going to get. Like, yes, totally. Obviously you have hopes, right? But Greatland Gold, for example, didn't know they were going to strike Harrier on. They were just hoping they get, you know, something, gold or copper. Sovereign Metals, you know, we were talking to Sapan over at Sovereign, and they were looking for graphite, and they hit rutile and found a massive system of graphite and titanium. And obviously, you're going, well, you know, at Garfield, we've probably got a really interesting copper, silver, gold mineralization. You might find you don't find that much gold or copper or silver. You find a wonderful uranium deposit that you don't know. It's the stranger things have happened. But yeah, that explains it a lot more if you've already got a company next to you that was doing drilling for uranium. So, you know, Garfield, I think, you know, this is, yes, again, it is early stage, but samples of copper concentrations up to 4.27% copper, gold grades up to 27.2 grams, over limit assay results. Some samples, you know, exceeding 23.92% copper equivalent, you know, that's some very good grades that you have there. So we're keeping an eye with interest. But again,
please do.
It's not a worry or nerve, but it feels like you've got to, and you know, we'll talk about Golconda and Kibby in a minute, but you've got to a stage where all of these targets, you're lining them up and now they all need to get drilled. So maybe, you know, we'll talk about that in a sec. But
it might be our strategy, Charles. I'm not gonna say too much, but maybe
I'm gonna tease something out of you before we get to the end.
Make me squirm a little bit.
Yeah. But Golconda, we haven't had an update for a while, have we? As far as I'm aware. I mean, we're rock sampling, strong arsenic anomalism. So you're looking, you know, at a feeder zone, potentially carlin-type gold mineralization. And then Golconda, it's, you know, at the confluence or in the middle, essentially, of the Getchell trend and the Battle Mountain Eureka trend. This won't mean anything to people who don't know Nevada, but, you know, if you want to Google it, you'll see it. You know, it's a pretty interesting spot. Golconda, you said it was a potential for a major gold discovery. How major is major at this stage?
Just a quick bit of background. So I actually used to work for Barrick Gold in Northern Nevada. So I spent quite a bit of time working on these Carlin deposits, which is what Golconda is prospective for. So when we say major, I encourage listeners to go to our presentation once again and just have a look at the property regional map, just to see what else is around there. I mean, a lot of listeners probably are familiar with various greenstone belts and different parts of Africa, you know, where a million ounce discovery is fantastic. That's not the scale here. The scale here is a lot different. You know, I'm just looking at the map myself. So Turquoise Ridge, about 20 kilometers to northeast of us, has 13 million ounces of gold at 5 gram per ton. Down to the southeast, Lone Tree has produced 4.2 million ounces of gold. SSR Mining at their Marigold has 6 million ounces. M&I, I used to work at Cortez Hills, which is just off this map. That's 15 million ounces of gold. Gold Strike, further to the northeast of us, is 50 million ounces of gold. So the reason Nevada really became the jurisdiction that it did for mining was on the back of these Carlin type systems. So when we built
Rush.
So the main gold rush, funny enough, it was in California, and the old timers in their buggies passed right over Nevada, and they literally drove right over these deposits, because what makes them challenging and difficult is the fact that you have this upper plate rock, so it obscures a lot of these deposits. But what you look for is little sniffs of gold in the upper plate, and then what you do is you drill down below the upper plate into the lower plate. This is a geological terminology, but the lower plate is what hosts your very large Carlin deposits. So the old timers literally drove over this. They didn't even know it existed, but it's actually one of the most prolific gold belts in the entire world. And what we have, in the long and short of it, is, as I mentioned, what you look for is little sniffs of gold in the upper plate, which tells you that there could be a feeder zone and there could be gold remobilized from a vertical fault into the lower plate below. And the long and short of it is, we have more than, I would say, a few sniffs of gold at surface. We have up to, I'm just reading the numbers here, 7.6 meters at 19.7 gram per ton gold. Another trench at surface returned, what do we have here, 15 meters at 7 grams per ton gold. So, I mean, I've worked a lot, and that's more than a sniff. I mean, what you're looking for typically is a bit of arsenic, a bit of mercury that maybe kind of leaked up these faults, and then you drill down. So what we have here is very, very promising signs at surface, and no one has ever gone in here and actually drilled for the feeder zone and for a potential source of Carlin-type gold at depth, which is a very, very exciting proposition if you're familiar with these systems and what they can deliver.
You used to work for Barry. I mean, potentially you've seen this before, you know, before you've known that there's a gold deposit, and you're from experience potentially seeing something similar. And while you can't guarantee it, you're hoping it's the same thing. This is what you're saying, maybe a little, I don't know. I guess my question might be, you're saying the gold is kind of underneath the surface, right? Is this something that you can get out of the ground with open pit mining, or do you need underground mining? Down the road, let's assume you find the gold. Mm-hmm. So what does the CapEx look like, the OpEx? Is it something that's quite easy to get out, or do you need a major on board? I don't know.
Well, the thing is, in this part of the world, there's one major. It's Newmont and Barrick who have joined forces, and they'll scoop up anything and everything. So there's when you prove something up, there's really just one major that you're working with, and ultimately they'll take it on because this is a huge part of their narrative and huge part of their, you know, gold story for the next 10, 20, 30 years, right? Which is a good problem to have. But to answer your question, well, first of all, almost all the deposits in the Carlin Trend have both an open pit and underground component. Typically, the grades are sufficient enough to support underground mining. What I will say is, and because these deposits are so rich, there's a lot of junior mining companies, most of them who trade in Canada, who are rightfully so drilling for these deposits. And what they're doing is exactly what we're doing, which is you're looking for gold at surface and you're drilling down. As you can imagine, the low-hanging fruit has been picked off. And what that means is a lot of companies are drilling 300-500 meter deep holes through much, much thicker upper plate rocks, looking for the lower plate. At Golconda, the upper plate is about 100 meters thick. So it's probably
number advantage.
And not huge, and massive. And this is massive. I looked at it when I first looked at it, I said, wait a second, look at this gold at surface. And then I looked at the cross section and went, wait, it's only 100 meters to get down to the lower plate and no one's ever tested it. So I was like, we gotta take this. Is actually the first asset we acquired in the golden medal. And with my experience in Carlin, I looked at it and went, you know, we need this thing. So we love it. You know, gold is fantastic. There's just, I don't want to sound too, I don't want to brag too much, but it's honestly, you just can't do it all. Right. And we love Garfield. We love Pilot. It's one that we certainly will continue to push forward, and I think we'll add value, but obviously you got to do things in a methodical order and not overextend yourself, so to say.
I'll be honest. What it sounds like you're saying, but you don't want to, is that Pilot you want to keep hold of forever. Garfield you want to keep hold of potentially forever. And Golconda you want to prove that there's some gold there that's worth going after. And potentially there'll be a for sale sign on that property once you've done that. Would you say that's fair, maybe?
Well, the thing is,
everything's for sale, but you know, maybe Golconda is that unlucky child who you say, I'm sorry, we'll prove you up and then we'll sell you on.
Well, everything's for sale, right, at the right price. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not going to stay married to anything. What I'm trying to do is return value to shareholders, because I'm a shareholder. And if I can return value to my shareholders, it means I do well too. So that's my focus. So, you know, anything's for sale. With that being said, with Golconda, like I said, there's typically one partner that acquires these things in this part of the world. So if we have some success with the drill bit, it's not even like you put a for sale sign up. They come and they knock down your door. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. And if we have some success there, certainly we'd be looking to bring in a partner to help explore and develop that.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of, okay, say you find some success, I guess it's the same. Pilot is different. I think it's got its own unique investment case and you don't know quite where that's going to go. With Garfield and Golconda, are you kind of open to any kind of commercial arrangement? Are you looking prove the assets a bit and then sell them on? Alternatively, royalty arrangements, joint ventures, earnings? Are you kind of open to everything at the moment, or do you have like specific financial strategies in mind?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're pretty open-minded and I'm pretty open-minded. So the reality is market changes very frequently. You know, if gold goes on a big run here or copper goes on a big run here, then the attractiveness of these assets very much can follow suit. So we're open-minded. Like I said, you know, what we're looking to do is return to shareholders. So if I see a deal on the table for one of these assets that I think gives adequate and value for what we have, as well as gives our investors access to upside either through royalty or retained interest, we will look at doing that. I mean, I'm a very commercial geologists. I'm not going to be too precious and you know, be stubborn and
try and retain,
fall in love with something when there's a good offer on the table. I mean, that's not, my shareholders aren't paying me to do that. They're paying me to find the best value and deliver to them. So whatever that looks like, we're open-minded. And yeah, I mean, I've said it a few times, so we're open-minded. I mean,
yeah, you're open-minded. You don't know. You don't know.
We don't know. We don't know. Things change. Exactly. Yeah. And all we'll do in the interim is push these along, push them up the value curve, which gets us closer to our goal of delivering shareholder value.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I shouldn't name them, but you know, I actually had 3 conversations last week with different CEOs. And one said, I'll never go into an earn-in, only free carry. Another said, I only want a royalty agreement. And another said, I'm only going to keep 100% of my asset and will raise, you know, to trill. And it made me laugh a bit. You know, people are stubborn. So it's nice to know that, you know, you're open to different deals of different kinds. And I imagine, you know, the people listening to this now, yes, it'll be investors, but it potentially might be people who are thinking, right, Oliver's got some nice little assets over there. Let's approach him and see what kind of deal he's open to.
And just on that, and not to say that any of those CEOs are wrong in their approach, but if I have blinders on and say, the only thing I'm going to accept is a X deal with an X royalty, well, I might miss I might miss a great deal that's on the table that doesn't fit into that model. So we're open-minded. I do sound like a broken record, but it makes sure that we can deliver the best we can for our shareholders.
Now, okay, we've gone through, you know, a few of the assets. The last I want to talk about is Kibby Basin and lithium, just because, you know, it's been most recently updated. So Kibby Basin, it's, you know, Kibby North and Kibby South, obviously lithium brine assets. Lithium price is not looking too healthy right now. I think that will rebound, hopefully, later. I mean, Goldman Sachs has the spodumene SC6 price. Average $1,250 per ton in 2024. It's a lot lower than that now, so hopefully it will rebound. Tell me about Kibby. Tell me, so you've got, again, it looks like another drill target to go after.
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it is. It's another drill target, and one that we feel quite confident in, especially with the latest kind of layer of data, which has shown us that the actual main conductor never got tested. The signs that we got and the data that we were able to extract from a drill hole that was completed 250 meters away tells us, first of all, that the Kibby Basin is lithium rich. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we have very thick intervals of specifically lithium and clays. And why that's important is these fluids, we're talking about rain, water, meteoric fluids that circulate through these basins, they pick up whatever sediments and rocks that they're kind of flowing through and percolating through. So if we have really thick intervals of very rich lithium and clay, that gives us more confidence in the fact that potentially a very exciting lithium brine has developed. And then we see the conductor, which has never been tested, is another very exciting kind of sign here at Kibby. So yeah, all the signs point to a very compelling target. And like you said, another great drill target. So it's just a matter of, you know, it's a good problem to have, but we need to now figure out, okay, what do we prioritize and what do we ultimately go out and drill, and what do we look to maybe partner up and get someone else to fund that for?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is kind of moves into the next part of conversation, which is about financing. Now, Pilot Mountain, you can't say how much you're applying for or when you're going to get the money, or you know, it could be tomorrow, it could be a few months from now. We don't know. You might be sitting on an RNS right now, 7 a.m. Here's $10 million. We don't know. Right. But you know, I would say my own opinion, not advice at all, not financial or investing advice. My own opinion is you will get grant funding of some kind to develop Pilot Mountain. And it may be the case that it's a few million and then show us that you've got something bigger than what you have now. And then that'll unlock more. I don't know, but I think it will eventually be forthcoming. And I've said this for nearly a year now. Well, I said this since your IPO. Mm-hmm. But while you're waiting for funding, I guess my first question is, if you're waiting for grant funding for Pilot Mountain and under the assumption you can't use grant funding for Pilot for other assets, potentially there's grant funding available for the other assets, what's the strategy to get the drill in the ground? I know there's warrants, there's about £2.5 million worth of warrants. I think it's 10.75p to be exercised. But then beyond that, what's the strategy?
Yeah, well, like I said, there's multiple ways to do this, right? So you rightly pointed out that we have warrants that are in the money. So that could provide immediate cash and money that we could use to theoretically drill any or all of the assets. On top of that, we have our existing cash reserves. On top of that, we have the grant, as you mentioned, which I can't comment on timelines, but Obviously, we are familiar with the timelines behind the scene as to when that would hit if we are successful. On top of that, there is the option to JV or partner up on any of these assets as well to a company who has the cash reserves to focus on, say, a lithium target. Yeah. So we have good connections with various groups who are you know, in the market for drill-ready targets that they can use existing cash reserves for. So long and short of it is there's lots of different options, Charles. All of them are available to us. So we're keeping our options open. We're looking at all different potential pathways forward. You know, we want to see these assets drilled. We know that's how we really unlock value here and get this company to the next level. That's not lost on us. But there's other things to consider. We want to minimize dilution as much as we can. If we have to dilute, we want it to be with the right people. We want it to be with, you know, longer term, high net worth, strategic family offices, those type of people. A lot of them ideally out of the US who, you know, will take the money in the position and lock it up for 3 years and let me just focus on drilling and adding value and getting Pilot Mountain into production. So those are all options, but you know, I could go tomorrow and do a raise with maybe a group that I don't want to and go and drill. Or if I wait an extra month, I can either, you know, get grant funding or do it with a fantastic group who means that position's locked away. So, you know, we're balancing all things. There's lots of things going on behind the scenes and we're juggling and making sure we ultimately make the right decision with the data that we have to make sure that this is in the best interest of the business and our shareholders.
I mean, I'm just looking at the chart at the moment. You started the year at 9.25p. End of January, you're at 16p. You've gone back down to 14, but you're still up 51% year to date. Potentially, this isn't retail. I mean, this is just my speculation. I don't think retail can move, can choose to move the needle to that level. My guess would be, and again, I don't know whether you can comment, whether you're allowed to, and you kind of alluded to it. Are you trying to put together a placing with strategic investors in the US? Is that what you're doing at the moment? Can you say anything?
No, once again, I mean, I can't comment on that. You know, what I can say is once again, based on the data points that we have, this is an asset that is,
I love it. I'm going to keep hearing it, but yeah.
Your hands are tied.
I get it.
Let me color it in for you. And what I'll say is that, you know, as you can probably guess, there's a lot of strategic US groups who would like to have a vested interest in what we're doing. There's a lot of money in the defense industry. There's a lot of money in defense technologies. And you can imagine there's a lot of money in defense supply chains. So, you know, if I do raise, it's going to be on my terms. It's going to be with groups that I'm comfortable placing shares with. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, this is not, you know, a company where we go to, you know, a certain group of investors and raise. It's a type of company with the strategic asset where we are having conversations with a much more unique group of potential investors and groups of people who want to align with what we're doing and the importance of mining tungsten in the US. So yeah, that's all I can kind of say about that. But you know, we're open-minded and there's conversations going on in the background on multiple fronts.
Yeah, you probably hear my laugh, and that sounds like a very long-winded yes to me. But yeah, I just hear that you can't confirm it completely, yes or no. Now, I mean, you made the little faux pas at the start. You talked about, you know, it was a it's not power metal, but power metal. you know, I know Sean, I know power metal very well.
Yeah.
Own 61% of the shares in issue. You own 0.7%-ish, I think, roughly. I know you had a little top up, you know, at the time that was, you know, at a high.
It's closer to 1% now. But yes.
Closer to 1% now. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's 62. I know there's other holders in there as well with very sticky hands. There's not that much of a free float in gold metal, is there? I don't think it would take that many buys to send it significantly higher, assuming, you know, all the stars align and everything goes well. I'm guessing Power Metal was very supportive of you, and you know, it looks at you as like, you know, one of the or potentially the jewel in the crown. Would you say that's fair?
Well, I mean, I can't put words in Sean's mouth.
No.
But you know, what I can say is you know, if you look at Power's market cap and you look at the book value of their golden metal holding, it's a very material part of the business right now. And you know, the reality is that's their business model at play, and that's the business model at work there, right? If we are successful and if we can build this up to, you know, just say 100 million pounds, I'm just taking a number out of the sky, well, that's worth, you know, $60 million pounds to them. So what I can say is, and I work very closely with Power and Sean, they are very supportive. They know the value of what we're doing. They know the value that we can unlock here. And yeah, so they're very supportive. On top of that, as you mentioned, you know, we have, well, there's two other high net worths on the registry who own just north of 10%. There's the entire management team. There's kind of close contacts and inside, not insiders, but people that are close to the business.
Yeah.
I would say there's probably, if I had to guess, maybe 20% free float. So really, really low.
Yeah. It's nothing,
and,
is it?
Yeah. And this isn't, obviously I can't comment on how people are viewing this, but the feedback I've gotten is this is not a stock that you flip. This is a stock that you park away and let us build value. Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, one of the ones where you, it's up 10%, you sell it and then you buy it back. This is, hey, put this away for 2-3 years. You know what the potential could be here and what we can think we can deliver. And that's what the majority of the people on our register are in this story for, is they're going to park it away and they're going to let us get on with the business. They're going to let us get on with, you know, pushing the grants forward and really growing the resource and hopefully putting this into production and becoming, you know, one of the most important, you know, well, the most important tungsten supplier, but a huge part of the, you know, desire and need to reshore these supply chains. And that's such an important part of what we're doing in 2024. Yeah. And we play into that perfectly. So that's why our investors let us kind of get on with the story and let us get on with pushing the value forward here.
Well, I'll tell you, I was kind of banging the drum back in November when you very briefly went under, you know, well, even back, you know, back in June. Well, June is when I first wrote the first article, and then November you were going trading sort of 7-8p. You're now up to, you know, 14p. I think you're going to go much higher. And I think what I kind of find funny, I mean, there's two things. First, it's it warrants, you know, that will be a source of really good funding, and you've got places you want to spend it. So that's great news. But I guess there's a lot of investors sitting on the sidelines now going, right, we want to buy shares in gold metal. We're going to wait for those warrants to get exercised, and then we're going to pile in. Would you say that's fair? But then I would say, you know, to counter that, if you're waiting, A, you waited too long, you should have bought a few months ago. And B, you might miss the boat, because that grant funding announcement, along with 100 other things, could get announced any day now. And you know, so I don't know. I would say you've got to balance that risk fee reward. But you know, I'm very bullish on gold metal. And I think, you know, on a personal note, you're a very personal person. And there's two things. The first is obviously those technical videos that you do from time to time are really enjoyable, because I'm not a geologist, but I can follow them along. And the other thing is, and I know that, you know, holders of the share all agree, and it's nothing to do, well, yes, okay, the share price has risen, so that's always nice, but there's a general sense of optimism that's kind of been lacking in the markets in 2022, 2023. People are looking at the share and going, it's going places, it's fun to be in, I'm enjoying being a shareholder. Whereas being a shareholder in certain other junior resource companies has just felt like being beaten down with a rock for about a year. So yeah, I mean, kudos to you, and it'll be really fun, you know, to watch you grow. I don't really have any more questions. I think we've kind of comprehensively covered almost everything that's going on. Do you have any kind of final closing comments?
Yeah, I mean, if I could just quickly comment on the warrants that you mentioned. Well, first of all, I think it's important just to note that the fact that we are the first warrants are in the money means we're doing our job, at least in some respect. So that's a positive, right? Because people are now looking at going warrants, oh, it's kind of this ugly thing. No, we're doing our job. This is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to get it above warrant levels and get those exercised. What I can also say is, as you mentioned, you know, and I'm not alluding to anything right now, but in this sector, news can drop any day and it can be transformational. I'm not alluding to anything on gold metal. I'm just speaking in broad terms as someone who's been involved in the sector. This could happen, and this happens in this sector, and that's why we all are in this sector, because you know, your life can change overnight. I'm not saying that's happening with gold metal. I'm just saying that's something that needs to be considered. On top of that, you know, the warrants are bringing in money, right? I outlined four pretty compelling drill targets, and there's plenty more. And the reality is, warrants means money in the business, and money means drilling. So, you know, if say 500,000 pounds of warrants came in and we used, you know, that to drill a few drill holes, and, you know, we drilled Desert Shield Lake Parallel West, and it is what we think it is or what we hope it is. Well, that money and that dilution is well worth the cost of entry, right? And just on top of that, I think sometimes people look at warrants and just assume that every single warrant holder needs to forward sell and then exercise. That's not the case. You know, a lot of the warrant holders, well, first of all, as you can probably guess, Power and our two other shareholders, largest shareholders, own the majority of those warrants.
Indeed.
And once again, these are not people who will exercise and then sell because they need to cover it, right? On top of that, a lot of the other warrant holders are very supportive of the business. So it's once again, if they are going to exercise, it's to increase their position and increase their long-term position. Obviously, there will be some people who will look at the spread and go, hey, I can sell it at this and buy it at this and I can make a bit of money. But we've built this business around larger shareholders who allow us just to push forward our long-term vision. So yes, there'll be a few warrants that I'm certainly will do that, but then we'll take that money and we'll go drill and look to deliver tremendous value with that money. And just the most important thing is the majority of those warrants are held by people who are first of all, held by our three largest shareholders, as well as other very people who are very supportive of the business and who wouldn't necessarily look to kind of cover that spread. So I look at it as a positive. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We are above the first warrant level. There's another warrant level, 17. We had to ultimately add warrants to the package back in May to get this away. It was a difficult market.
Well, I'm surprised. Very few managed to, so kudos to that as well.
Yeah, and it's bringing in money. It's allowing us to go and invest in these fantastic targets. And like I said, a lot of it is going to be done by groups who are very supportive of the business over the long term. So yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because it's a comment I've gotten, but that's kind of my answer, my rebuttal. And I'm very happy with the position we're at and where we're going here and what we can do with that money.
I'm very happy with it as well. And I've seen great things for 2024, hopefully 2025. There's more news flow coming, I'm sure. Oliver, it's been great to chat to you.
I think on that note, we'll wrap things up there. It's been a fascinating discussion. I'm sure you'll all agree. I'll say Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources, and Charles Archer, financial journalist and investor. Thanks very much for your time.
Okay, take care. Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.